Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Laura Dawn Knoll, who won the title of Miss Montreal in September of 1988. The following month, she placed as a semifinalist at the 1989 Miss Canada pageant. Her unlikely path from beauty queen to humanitarian and her search for meaning led her to meet Mother Teresa and subsequently work in the slums of India, during an era in which her choice was considered unusual. In addition to Laura Dawn's journey being the subject of interviews by reporters from various newspapers and magazines, her story has been featured in World Vision telecasts and an internationally aired telecast with the Billy Graham Crusade. Her newly released book, Reflections of India, The Spiritual Journey of a Beauty Queen, shares her experience of spiritual awakening. Passionate to pursue the path less traveled, Laura Dawn has since attended a Master's of Science degree in nursing from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, and a Master's of Art degree in Biblical Studies from the University of Sheffield in England. She has been working as a nurse practitioner in various healthcare settings over the last 21 years in both the United States and in Canada, and currently works in the province of Ontario, Canada. Laura Dawn, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Living Above the Drama. What an exciting story. I can't wait for you to share it with our audience. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, it is something that really caught my eye. I often tell the listeners, you know, when you host a radio show, you generally get to pick the individuals that you're interviewing, and it's been my pleasure to be able to select some of the most fascinating subjects, and yours is certainly one of them. So,
oh my goodness, I'm very flattered.
Absolutely. So let's just jump in right away and let the listeners know how all of this began. You have a very interesting story. I mean, you're the only child of older parents, and you got involved in modeling at an early age. So take us from there to how you found yourself. I mean, the beauty queen part isn't as surprising as finding yourself in India with the poorest of poor.
Yes, it was a very interesting journey, I have to say, and it surprises me to this day that I took this journey. I did start out in modeling as a teenager, and I was, of course, like young people, always searching for meaning and what should I do with the rest of my life and who and what is important, questions like these that you ask yourself. And after we moved back to Montreal, which is where I was born, I was about 16 and I entered McGill University, and that's when many people had suggested that I enter a beauty pageant. And I thought, well, if beauty's a gift, maybe I should use it. Who knows where it will take me. So I entered Miss Montreal in 1988, and I did win that contest. It was just an amazing experience being crowned the winner, something that I didn't think would necessarily happen to me. And it did open up a world of opportunities to serve others, actually. I visited sick children in the hospital and the elderly in their institutional surroundings. And I started to understand a deep love and how that experience of love affects change in your life and in your thinking patterns and even your goals for your future. So as I did these activities, I, of course, then had gone to the Miss Canada pageant during this time, and I placed as a semifinalist, which wasn't winning, and the loss of that title did redirect my thinking as to, you know, what do I do next when your dream doesn't come true. So I did a lot of soul searching, and I started having, I would call them visions of working among the desperately poor for some reason, and I started seeing Mother Teresa as well. And it was funny because I'd never thought much about her in the past or, you know, seen her much on TV. I've definitely heard of her, but I never focused on her. And being a Protestant, we didn't really dwell on Roman Catholic tradition or leadership. And I just felt a sudden need to go and work with her, meet her. And so I arranged it, actually. I did a quick trip to Washington, D.C., where she was supposed to be attending a service to honor the finalization of the vows of the nuns from her order. And I just took a plane and landed down in Washington, D.C., and I called the convent when I got there. And I spoke to the lady and I told her that I am going to be going to India to work in the slums of Calcutta and with her sisters. And is there any opportunity that I could possibly have to meet her? And she said, most certainly, just come down to the cathedral tomorrow morning as you've planned and speak to whoever's in leadership there and we'll arrange it for you. So the next morning, I went down to the cathedral, St. Matthew's Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and I spoke to the woman that I first saw who looked like she was in charge there, and I told her who I was, and she says, oh, I know you. You spoke to my mother on the phone yesterday. So small world, and definitely a bit of a miracle there, but this is how God opens doors for people when they seek after him. And after that, I was introduced to her at the Gift of Peace Convent. After the ceremony was over, we had gone up there. And that was a very brief meeting. But then this lady, Martha, who had arranged the meeting, said, would you accompany Mother Teresa the rest of the day? She's got an interview to go to, and she's going to be stopping by to meet the bishop and possibly the president of the United States. And I thought, my goodness, of course I'm going to go. You know, who wouldn't?
So, who wouldn't go, yes.
Yeah, so I spent the rest of the afternoon riding in the car, sitting right beside her, and along with Sister Frederique, Martha, and the priest. And we obviously did a lot of praying, and we ended up in the studio where she was being interviewed, and the talk show host had been kind of known to be a bit skeptical of religious figures, so we were all nervously anticipating this discourse. And she did very well. I think she answered the questions very well. I felt the Holy Spirit was with her to give her those answers. She was transparent and honest about where she stood and what she didn't know. And I thought it was a glorious interview. Afterwards, of course, people crowded around her and there was a lot of photographers. And then we headed off to the next destination. One of the more memorable things she told me was that the preparation for India had to be done in my heart. And she talked about her favorite miracle that she had ever seen. And she told me also some practical advice, like you need to wear something cool because it's going to be hot there, no? So funny things like that that I remember. She gave me some medals she had blessed that I wore, of course, the whole time I was there. And I still have them to this day. So it's a great memory, I would say, when I look at those medals to remember the past and the lessons that I learned in India and in meeting Mother Teresa herself.
Now, how was it that you were able to contact India and talk to the Sisters of Charity and sign on to spend some time working with them? How did that work?
Well, both with my trip to Bombay and Calcutta, I just took the initiative, really. I called World Vision because that was the organization I was affiliated with when I went to Bombay. And a simple call gets you a long way there. They're very willing to help you and serve you, especially when you want to do something benevolent. So that was arranged easily. The gentleman that was to accompany me on this journey in Bombay was there waiting for me at the airport at wee hours in the morning. So they're quite organized. With the Missionaries of Charity, I had called the sisters in Calcutta before I left Montreal and just told them that I would like to be there. And of course, they welcome you with open arms. They're very charitable. They love everyone. There's no barriers with them. If you want to serve, come on down. You know, come and see is the motto. And so when I arrived in Bombay, just before I left there, I did call the sisters a second time and told them that I was on my way. And they were anticipating my arrival. And we ended up on their doorstep a few hours later.
Wow. Now, one of the talking points that is included with your bio is how you felt when you entered the culture was it Bombay? Was that the first place that you went? And the abject poverty and the overwhelming suffering of people. And can you share with us? I mean, most of us will never have that experience. So can you share with us what was it like to be in a culture, in an environment that was completely unknown to you prior to getting off the plane?
Yes, it was definitely a culture shock. And I think what struck me most was how real it was. I mean, you can look at images on the television screen or see pictures in a magazine, but when you're there, you can smell, taste, and touch the poverty. So it becomes your own reality in many ways. And I definitely felt fear initially and a little claustrophobic. I remember walking down an alleyway full of people that was no wider than about 4 feet across, and feeling just overwhelmed with that that sensation of being closed in and there's no escape, and the heat was stifling. But over time, even that close physical proximity to other people made me feel included too, because they would give me strong eye contact and sometimes try to approach me. And by comparison, in our own society, despite our material comforts, there's a distance between people that you can even feel sometimes that you're invisible.
Wow. So in the midst of some really challenging experience, you found the beauty and the love that she often talked about. Mother Teresa, I shared with you in the pre-interview, and just for the audience's reference, I had a television show for 21 years on the Faith and Values channel before I retired in 2008. And as part of being involved with Faith and Values media, I had the opportunity to meet Mother Teresa. And yeah, meeting her is such an extraordinary experience. I mean, you had an incredible experience in the culture of India, and you had an incredible experience in meeting her. Do you want to share with the audience what it's like to be in her presence and the kind of amazing, almost instant awe that she inspires? Just, she's a tiny little she was a tiny little weazen thing, you know? And I mean, you see this, you know, 4'9" hunched over little weazened woman, and who would believe that she would generate the kind of energetic aura that she did?
Yes. When I first saw her, of course, I thought she was adorable. She was very unassuming and had, like you say, a humble demeanor. I think the fact that she was famous made me very excited about the meeting, as I wasn't exempt from the rush you get when you meet a celebrity. Knowing all about her life and her sensational works prior to meeting her, though, gave me a certain reverence for her as well. But despite the intensity, she had a soothing, gentle presence, and she put me at ease.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, did she spoke English? Of course, we know that.
Yes, very well.
Did you have an opportunity to actually talk with her, or was it mostly being in her presence? Did she actually give you some insight as to about going to India, or what was your share with her? How did that go?
She's very quiet. She spent a lot of time in prayer. She did the rosary most of the trip that we had going to the interview. She speaks few words, but when she speaks, there's tremendous depth to what she's saying, even though it's put simply. And when she spoke to me, like I said, she was just more giving me practical advice about, you know, what I should be wearing, that I should wear the medal she had given me. She believed in miracles. Her favorite miracle was, she said, the time they had been praying for the right medication to give to a dying man, and they didn't have it. And right about after the prayer was over, somebody came to the door with a box of supplies. And she said when she opened the box, the medicine was right on top. And she said it was a box filled with things that had no relationship to medication at all. So she said it wasn't supposed to be in the box, but it was. And it's that kind of faith that I think that drove her to what she did, you know, doing things that people wouldn't normally risk doing because the chances of failure are so great. And walking in that blind faith is kind of what I took away from what she told me in the car. And I think that has helped guide me in my life, not only then and having the confidence to leave literally my home by myself as 19-year-old and go to desperate poverty, not knowing what was going to be there or if the person I was supposed to meet would even show up. That's the kind of blind faith that I think can take you places that you wouldn't otherwise go.
Yeah, so a lot of us do not have the experience of being touched by what you have referred to as the Holy Spirit, or to be touched by faith or divine intervention. For you, you came from a completely different reality. You wanted to be a beauty queen, and you won your contest to the first level, and it didn't continue for you after that. So here you are in a very different reality, totally different reality, and all of a sudden you are thinking about Mother Teresa and the slums of Bombay and Calcutta. Now, what was it like? Did you wake up one day? Was it a slow awareness that came over you? What was your experience of what they would call a spiritual awakening? Because your book is really about your spiritual journey and your spiritual awakening. So what was that like when it really started to hit you?
Yes, actually the visions of working in that kind of poverty and meeting her came almost out of nowhere. It was just that soul searching of what should I do with the rest of my life and not really knowing what was important or what I should pursue with my youthful energy, if you will. And I was running one day, and this is when this struck me. I just started thinking about this spontaneously. I think as I got older and I looked back on my lessons I learned in India and faced, you know, a lot of barriers in my adult life, the depth came and the spiritual awakening grew. And I think that initially I didn't necessarily have that great insight. It just came later for me.
Well, so it was a gradual thing then for you. It, it kind of, it's like water dripping on a rock. It entered your consciousness and then it grew from there. How long was it between the second beauty contest and placing as a runner-up, but not moving on to the, you know, the Miss Universe? How long was it between then and your journey to India?
Okay, so that would have been October was the Miss Canada pageant, and the following June, I was on my way to India. So
wow.
That would be 8 months or so.
So that was actually quite rapid, although it didn't hit you like a ton of bricks, as they say. It came on rather quickly from your, it was a redirection of sorts, Laura Dawn, don't you think? I mean, it was kind of a redirection from you looking in this direction that was really about glamour and celebrity. And then you redirected your energy and your attention to the spiritual, which is, let's face it, that's quite a leap. Yeah,
I think so. I think even people who are in the media and who do well in the secular realm, if we want to call it that, can find a depth in that. And we see that there's great humanitarian works by people who are very rich and famous. And I wouldn't have minded going down that path. But I think for me, when the door closed, that was a sign to me personally that that wasn't the road for me to travel. And when I started to have these strong thoughts, and many times people will say that's the impression of the Holy Spirit on somebody who's seeking, because sometimes I've found, like with my own thoughts, they're kind of weaker, they don't last as long, and they're not as important, and they don't strike me as strongly as an impression of the Holy Spirit would. Even when I've had dreams of things to come, which have come to pass later, that dream was very different from other dreams I'd had, where it's just more a manifestation of my own anxiety, or, you know, maybe glimpses of the past that I'm re-going through or reimagining. It's a different voice, I would say. It's not audible, but it's a strong impression. And I think I can tell the difference even today between what my thoughts are versus what God's voice is.
That is a very intense and powerful statement. And when we come back from break, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I would love for you to continue on the thought of how do we know what is our imagination, what is our ambition, what is our direction that we're creating for ourselves, and how do we know that something else is going on? We can call it the voice of God, we can call it divine intervention, but there's something else besides our own self that's going on. So don't go away, listeners. We will be back very shortly to continue this wonderful conversation.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
We're talking to Laura Dawn Knoll, who won the title of Miss Montreal and was a semifinalist in the Miss Canada pageant. She is also the author of the newly released book, Reflections of India, The Spiritual Journey of a Beauty Queen. Laura, before the break, we were talking about knowing how we can discern, how we can know what is being kind of allowed in our thought process, what is being encouraged, what is being invited. A lot of times what you were saying is that, you know, these are musings of ours, you know, their impulses or their, you know, desires or dreams or longings, and they fade rather quickly. You know, we can have an idea that we want to do something or be something, and yet they can come quickly and they can leave just as quickly. You were talking about how you began to discern the difference between your own thought processes and that you felt that God was talking to you. So can you speak to that, please?
Yes. Like I was mentioning, I think that like a lot of our own thoughts can be self-centered. They can be just unreasonable. They can reflect a lot of anxiety. There's many dysfunctions with our own thinking patterns sometimes, and we see, you know, people who struggle with mental health issues, how that dysfunctional thinking can really bring them down. And I think young people especially are a bit prone to that if they don't have a very positive environment that they're living in, because they're vulnerable, because they don't know who they are yet. They're still trying to find themselves. And I think I was at that stage at that age. And this is where this strong, you know, voice came to kind of surrender to the higher power instead of trying to work out my own life and struggle and get angry when things don't go my way. And years later, I actually read a Bible study that had been outlined by Blackaby and King. It's actually described in my book, and it talks about certain steps in trying to find out the difference between our own voice and God's voice. And I thought it kind of nailed down the important points that we should all know about and be aware of in our day-to-day. And the first step is you got to know that God is always at work around you. So we can't ever say, you know what, I don't see God today. He's been gone a long time. I don't feel close to him. He is always working around us. He's omniscient and omnipotent, really, and he's always present. So there's always something happening. Second step is God pursues a continuing love relationship with us that's real and personal. So he hasn't ignored us. He doesn't forget that we exist. He doesn't scratch his head wondering what he's going to do with our lives. He has a plan for us, and he's seeking that relationship with us even every day. He's dropping hints that he loves us. He's kind of showing us glimpses into the eternal life if you're looking. The third step, you know, God invites you to become involved with him in his work. And he speaks through us through usually about four different channels. Usually the Bible is involved. So scripture, what does it say? And is your idea consistent with biblical truth? The second avenue being prayer. So through prayer and supplication, we can ask for what we want in his name. And if it's his will, then he'll grant it to us if we're living according to his you know, rules and his plan for our lives. The third is circumstances. So what doors open and what doors close? And then looking at the church as well, because the church itself is an instrument of God, and they are often the people in the church able to reveal God's purposes and his ways, and they speak words of knowledge to people. There's people with special giftings in that area in the church. So as a body would function, you know, the mouth can speak and the people hear. And so sometimes you have these folks that can speak a prophetic word into your life. And they're saying that when all of these things are in one accord, that would be God's voice, and that leads to an invitation. And that invitation to do the work that he's calling you to brings you to what they deem a crisis of belief. So, you know, do I believe what I'm hearing, or do I want to turn away? Another step is accepting the invitation, and that requires faith and action. So we can't always just stay where we are doing what we were doing. We have to actually take a step and turn from what we're doing and start down a different path. And they believe, you know, Blackaby and King mentioned that obedience means making major adjustments in our lives, but that through that obedience will be used in supernatural ways that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Wow. And so you must have gone through that journey in a very short period of time.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. If I could have put my thumb on something or my finger on something and just say, you know, this is maybe how the process happened, I think they kind of nailed it for me in the detail that I might not have been able to articulate years ago. But it just seemed like every door was open for this to happen. And even just, you know, going to Washington, D.C. and having a day like I did with Mother Teresa was another sign that this is the way to go.
And one of the interesting things, and I'm speaking for myself as, you know, in my spiritual journey, surrender is it has to be the hardest thing, mm-hmm. because we have to give up our fear and our uncertainty. And we have to really trust with our whole heart that if we let go of trying to orchestrate our lives, that someone, some benevolent one is going to catch us. It's that exercise of falling backward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a profoundly challenging process. But what you're sharing with us is that you went through that process rather quickly, actually.
Yes, I think so.
And you fell backwards into the arms of the divine. One of the things that, you know, when I was first getting to know about Mother Teresa, which was back in the 70s, actually, I first was acquainted with her when I was going to Columbia in New York City, was that there was an author. He was very well known, Malcolm Muddridge, and he was a British journalist and wrote about Mother Teresa. And he was a non-believer. You know, he was very skeptical, and when he was young, he was attracted to communism, and it was just very, he worked as a spy for the British government. I mean, you could say this man was a bit cynical. And later in his life, and of course, he met Mother Teresa and had a lot of interaction with her and wrote about her. He came to conversion. He became a Christian, which was really quite shocking, you know, for many, many mm-hmm. people. And I think what you're describing, Laura Dawn, is conversion, how we become converted from one extreme into another extreme. And do you have any insight as to what, I mean, look, we have to be motivated to let in, you know, we have to let go, we have to get rid of in order to allow things to come into us. Were you aware of anything you might have let go of after the Miss Canada pageant, that by releasing that and surrendering to what presented itself to you, was there anything that you were aware of that may have been part of that conversion process?
Yes, I think just letting go of my own agenda. When you're young, and when I was young especially, I wanted to move into high society, and I wanted to be known, and I wanted to really make my mark on the world. And I did try to pursue that up until the point that I was in some ways stopped from doing that. And I was redirected, as you mentioned. And I think that sometimes we can resent that closure or barrier, but when we see it as the hand of God in our lives to possibly protect us from something we shouldn't be involved in at the time, or something that could cause irreparable harm, we should be grateful, and that peace would come subsequent to that thought. If you are just aggressive and angry after a failure or perceived failure, I think that that can lead you down the wrong path, spiritually especially. And mm-hmm. I think letting go and redirecting my attention and getting into theology and nursing has been the road I was supposed to travel. Whether or not it's a comfortable life, we won't discuss that. But it's just a matter of, you know, being in the place that I'm supposed to be. And I think that if I wasn't in the place I was supposed to be, I'd suffer a lack of peace even more than I sometimes do now, you know.
Wow. So for you, the months, the immediate weeks and months following the Miss Canada pageant, what were you busy doing then when you came to accept things and you came to know that this was not going to be your path moving forward? Were you thinking about the future? Were you planning education? What was going on for you at that point when all of this wonderful, really surrender took place?
I definitely was still at McGill University, and I was in English literature as a major. And so I was thinking, you know, I would definitely be a writer at some point. I thought that my skills were improving in the written language. And I thought, you know, God's given me that talent that I've had to work on very hard, but it has become a talent. I always look at what the person's talent is. And for myself, I had several talents. And I thought, what does God really want to use for the future? So I started to examine that. And I did have a love for theology because I grew up in the church and obviously was smitten by Mother Teresa and her work and bringing a compassion to, you know, a sad and hurting world is the, you know, the whole image that really attracted me and is really, really encouraged in theology. And I wanted to know more about God, and then I wanted to be able to do the practical service, like the foot washing scenario every day, because I thought that was just amazing. And to be in that servant role became foremost in my mind. And this is when I started to pursue not only finishing my Bachelor of Arts degree, but I wanted to move on into theology and nursing. And then I just applied to those universities and the right doors opened and I ended up where I was supposed to be.
Wow. So you were in college at the time that your career as a beauty contestant ended. And so you continued with that at McGill.
Yes,
and then when you finished your degree, had you finished your degree before you went to India or did you do that upon returning?
No, I just went to India over the summer, so we were off anyway. And I used that summer vacation for that endeavor. And then I was back full swing in the fall back at school.
And then you completed that degree and then went on to get the nursing and the theology degree. What was it like reentering after you had this, cultural experience of, you know, being in another world? What was it like coming back to, home to Canada and realizing that you were now really in an altered universe compared to where you had been during the summer?
I definitely missed parts of India that, you know, kind of make you just long to go back. And I missed the sisters, their great humility and profound works every day. Like everything was so meaningful when I was there, like giving a cup of water had eternal rings to it. When you come back to the West, I didn't feel that intensity anymore. But I did feel comfortable, in my home environment. I was living with my parents and things went back to normal. But I think I was forever changed as well. And the desire to go into nursing became stronger and stronger. And despite some barriers, I got through that program and graduated and then started my nursing career. So that vision and what I saw stayed with me throughout that time. And the culture shock was coming back definitely because you realize that most people in your circle hadn't experienced that kind of desperate poverty and you couldn't fully relate to the people that you used to, you know, because mm-hmm. they don't have that common experience. But they were good listeners and I definitely got some attention from the media. They were interested in telling my story mm-hmm. and I got to write for the first time in the newspaper, which was exciting. So I did want to pursue my writing career too a little bit because I feel it's a great way to communicate with other people. You can spend time, you know, concentrating on what you're going to say and say it exactly how you want it to be said mm-hmm. and then publish it and then people can read it and have it affect their lives as well.
Sure. And you also, of course, were keeping a diary of the time you spent in India, which subsequently became the book that you just recently published. But before we go into the book and we are going to talk about it, do you feel that when you were in Bombay as opposed to being in Canada, do you feel that there was an energetic reality that really made the difference in what you experienced? Was it, I mean, look, we in the West, we may not have abject poverty, physical poverty, but many of us and many culture, you know, enculturations and communities in the West suffer terrible spiritual poverty. And my question for you is, do you feel that it's an energetic presence that you can sense when you're around people who may have material goods, but who are really lacking in a spiritual fulfillment?
Yes, I'd like to think that I bring that kind of energy in the work I do even now. I think that the spiritual poverty you're talking about is quite real. I mean, definitely, I believe there's spiritual poverty in India, too. Most people are not Christians. However, there is a joy there that you can't surpass. There's a desire to share things with one another, with the little they have. They want to share with people. A little kid will give you their last candy because they think it's the right thing to do. And here, I think there's a little more self-centeredness with people who have, you know, materialistic goods. But I think the poverty here, too, there are quite a few marginalized people in our own communities, people who feel left out, and they feel that they don't have a lot of purpose in life, that they can't fulfill the duties they used to as perhaps an employee somewhere working in a job. They are in disability, they're on welfare, they are crippled with pain. I see it every day, and there's a sense and a depression that comes on them because they feel they're not fulfilling their purpose. And I think that is a poverty in itself, and it's sometimes harder to minister to that than it would be a physical need, because you can give water to the thirsty, you can give food to the hungry, but how do you minister to a spiritual emptiness or a lack of self-worth to somebody? I think it's possible, and I'm hoping to do that. You know, every day that I go to work is bestowing a sense of honor on people who may have been discarded by society.
Well, that's a perfect way of describing it, because Mother Teresa talked all the time about reflecting to people God's presence, which is loving and accepting and embracing and valuing. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think that the way you described it is perfect. One of the other things, you and I talked about this on the pre-interview, and I think it's very meaningful, especially in the West today. I asked you, I said, did you feel chosen? You know, how did it feel? How does it feel to feel publicly and in a very large venue way chosen? Because what we're talking about are individual human beings, all of us, who want to be chosen. And maybe we don't realize we want to be chosen by God, which might be that God says, you go and work in the post office. You go and write a book. You go and have children. But that by finding our right work, our path, and feeling that that it is blessed or it is invited by God, there is a sense of being chosen. And because you have been publicly, you know, chosen as a beauty queen, we talked about that. So we're going to take a break because, believe it or not, we are almost to the end. We've got about another 10, 12 minutes to go when we come back. I would love for you to talk about this because this is something people think about all the time. You know, well, when I get that promotion, when I get recognized, you know, when somebody proposes to me. Or, you know, there are so many different things that people are saying, when I get chosen. So when we come back from the break, if you would talk about that, and then we're going to talk about your book and the work that you're currently doing and what you would like the listeners to know about what you've experienced in this calling that was invited you to have this this wonderful spiritual experience. We will be back. Listeners, don't go away.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back talking to Laura Dawn Noel, who is the author of a newly released book, Reflections of India, The Spiritual Journey of a Beauty Queen, where she shares her experience of spiritual awakening and traveling to India to work with Mother Teresa's Sisters of Charity. So, Laura Dawn, what is this experience of being chosen? Because not only were you chosen as a beauty queen, but then you were chosen spiritually to really have this wonderful journey that you are still on. You're a nurse practitioner, and you've been working as such, I think, for 21, 22 years now. Mm-hmm. And so you're still on this journey. So what is this sense, this fulfillment of being chosen and knowing that your life is on its purpose and is on the right path for you?
Yeah, I think in some ways the crowning at Miss Montreal foreshadowed the choosing of my, you know, my service to God and the path that I was to travel in my vocation. And the crowning itself was exhilarating. It was wonderful to have somebody put a tear on my head and have people approve of who I was and to walk down the ramp and wave to the crowds that were emotional and standing and clapping, hollering, and it was just a very exciting moment. And as exciting as that was, though, I think in some ways this is the reaction that's happening in heaven when people find their calling, when they surrender to God and find the path or to travel. There's great rejoicing when soul is saved, the Bible mentions. And I think it's just a bit of a glimpse into the heavenly joy that becomes available and happens while we're discovering this path and when we do fulfill the calling, because let's face it, if we miss that calling, we can't be used as we were planned to be used. And this could reflect in the next life with the reward system. We believe that as Christians, we'll be rewarded based on what we've done. And it's a big deal. It's an eternal thing. And I think many people can be chosen if they hear the voice and they pursue it. And I think that, you know, if they have barriers to finding that calling, that they should, you know, maybe get involved with a trusted counselor who can kind of go through, you know, their past and their upbringing, you know, look at whether faith was an integral part in their family upbringing, and see if there's barriers from that end, and that if they are existing, that they can overcome it with prayer and a real decision to change and to overcome those barriers. And that just takes, you know, strong will and moving forward with the plan despite attacks, despite people perhaps attacking that that desire, people trying to, you know, distract you from that goal. I think the world offers a lot of distraction, but a lot of times it leads people down the wrong path and they waste their lives. And then at the end, the question comes into place whether they're even saved or not. And I think that kind of being persistent with the goal, pressing forward for that goal and achieving it in Christ Jesus is where we're supposed to be headed. And being chosen, I think, can happen for everybody in that regard. But they have to really desire it. And I think that when the doors start to close, that if it's something that they had wanted, they need to let it go and realize that there's a different destiny for them.
That what you just said, when the door closes, they have to realize there's a different destiny for them. Just this morning, I was reading a book called How to Live a Miraculous Life. And one of the barriers to doing that is to hold on to things that we need to let go of, that letting go is one of the real deterrents to allowing in what it is that the divine, call it whatever, because, you know, I love that passage, in my Father's house there are many mansions. There are many different cultures and people and faiths and religions. And although I believe that the metaphor of Christian teaching is applicable in all cultures and faiths, and it's actually found in the teachings of all cultures and faiths, when we look at be still and know that I am God, I think that the hardest thing for us as human beings is we're given an ego, we're given a mind, and we have to balance that ego and that mind with the heart and the soul. So what you're saying is incredibly appropriate. Let's talk about your book. Now, you took the diary of your time spent in India, and in 2001, you originally finished writing the book, but you didn't publish it then. You said it just wasn't the time. There was too much going on. You were doing your nursing work. You were very busy. And then you published the book in November of 2018, just recently published. Mm-hmm. So could you talk to us about your diary? And you were studying writing. So do you think that those years, those 17 years, were necessary for you to actually polish or to refine the book and the experience that you had in India?
Actually, the book was finished in 2001. The barrier at the time was, like you mentioned, time. I was working full-time as a nurse practitioner. I wouldn't have any time to market my book. That's a huge part in sales. And I just felt that it wasn't the right time. I didn't have any support from the family to go through with the publication. Whether or not that was a mistake, I don't know. But when the 2016 canonization of Mother Teresa was announced, I thought, you know what, if I'm ever going to do this, I have to do it that year. So by early summer, I'd say, I started to look at the book again and see what other steps I need to do to push it through to be published. And the journey was lengthy, and I thought it wouldn't take long because, you know, I thought the bulk of the work had already been done. But in the end, publishing itself is another whole journey. And
a very exhausting one,
especially when you're doing a lot of the work on your own. So I had to get an editor to look at it, and I think she went through it 4 or 5 times, and I went through it many more. And I had to design my cover, back cover, spine. You know, I had to learn about InDesign and Photoshopping, and so things that are very time-consuming and costly in many ways. So I think, you know, as much as I would have loved to publish in 2002, it really wasn't the right timing because I didn't know what I was in for. By the time 2016 came, the canonization was in September. I still hadn't finished everything I had to do. And I thought, you know what, I, you know, missed this deadline that I had in mind. But once again, I have to get myself out of the picture and just go with the open doors. And the doors open for me to work on Thursdays on the book with a tutor who helped me put everything together. And then by the time 2018 rolled around, it was ready. And I thought, you know, it's a timeless story. It's something that everybody will enjoy. And to have it late, perhaps, is better than never. And it's really my testimony. And the events end in the year 2000. But in the meantime, I think relevant lessons for today. And I think that most people who will read this book will get great insight. And it in some ways saves them time because they no longer have to go through all these hurdles and barriers themselves. They can read in a few hours how somebody else overcame them and techniques and scripture that helped them through. And for that reason, I think it's a good read, and it's beneficial for anybody. Possibly the market would be for young girls who are struggling with their faith, wondering who they're supposed to be and what they're meant to do. I think that that would be a great audience, but really anybody and everybody can read this book and learn something, I think, and appreciate the lessons.
Wonderful, Laura Dawn. Can you tell us where to find the book and your website, please? Could we have your website?
Yes. Right now, my e-book and paperback is available on my website, and that's www.weldbooks. So that's weldbooks.ca. And my ebook is available through Kindle on Amazon as well.
So they can get the book on Amazon in a Kindle, or they can go to weldbooks.ca and get the hard copy of the paperback version, yes?
Right. That's right.
It's really funny. Everybody thinks that self-publishing is so easy. The whole thing about writing, as you know, writing is rewriting and rewriting and rewriting.
Yes, and editing.
The editing process, which never ends, does it?
No.
And then there's all the technical stuff. And today, especially in the self-publishing world, there is so much you need to know. There are so many details to publishing, even self-publishing. And writing a book in and of itself is a pretty big undertaking. And it's only until you've done it that you know, right? I mean, I wrote a book that was published, is on Amazon, called Changing Behavior. And it was a lot of research. There was a lot of footnoting and researching. And boy, I have to tell you, the footnoting and the researching had to have been the worst part of the whole thing, you know? There's lots that goes into it. But Laura Dawn, you have shared with us a remarkable story, a wonderful journey. And I hope that for all of us, the young ones and the old ones, who really want to take a look at what's possible when life doesn't go our way, you know, when our dreams don't come true, and how a door can open when another one closes and bring us into the fullness of life on many levels. I thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another inspiring, uplifting, and informative show on Living Above the Drama.